Hey everyone, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Ready to, learn some more about the law with us?
Always exciting stuff.
Always, right. So today we're going to be looking at non-competes. It's always, like, tricky, right? Trying to figure where the line is. And we're going to be looking at a Florida case, AirCoolCorp.v. Oosthuizen. This one really gets into, like, can training, like, actually make it so someone can't compete with you?
Yeah, it's a really interesting case that kind of gets into how courts are trying to, you know, balance the right of a company to protect their investment in training, you know, versus the employee's right to work.
Yeah, for sure. And it all comes down to that question of, can a company actually, like, stop you from working for a competitor just because they, you know, spent the time training you?
Yeah, that's the question, right?
Right.
And the answer, like most things in law, is it depends. And this case really kind of unpacks all those little details.
All those nuances, yeah. So let's just get right into it. So we've got AirCool Corporation. They're the, you know, company in this case, and they're all about overhauling aircraft components. And back in 1993, they hired Gilbert Oosthuizen, who, get this, had zero experience in aviation repair, like at all. He was working in a restaurant before this.
Yeah. A big change.
Total career.
Career change. Yeah. It's really interesting that they, you know, saw the potential in him and decided to invest in training him.
Yeah.
And we're talking over 195 hours of like specialized training in repairing and overhauling these aircraft components. And a big focus of that was, you know, on heat exchangers.
Well, 195. I mean, that's a commitment. That's not just like, oh, you know, here's 5 minutes on the, you know, coffee machine and you're good to go.
Right.
So when you see a number like that, I mean, like, what stands out to you from like a legal perspective?
Well, it's really interesting how the court really focused on that number as a key factor. You know, it wasn't just that, you know, okay, some training happened. It was the amount of it, the 195 hours. And that was assigned to them of a really quantifiable investment by AirCool.
Right.
And so that caught their eye. And it, you know, really highlights a big takeaway for lawyers who are writing non-competes, you know, document everything. The more detailed, the more specific you are about the training, you know, that was given, the stronger your case is going
to
be.
Yeah. It's like, if you want to enforce that non-compete, you better have the receipts to back it up, right?
That's a great way to put it. And it, you know, this wasn't some, you know, theoretical training program. He actually got a temporary airman certificate from the FAA, allowing him to work, you know, officially as a repairman while he was at AirCool. And he even got promoted to repair manager. So, you know, not bad for someone who had new experience, you know, when he started.
So it sounds like it really paid off for both of them, that, you know, that investment that they made in him. But I'm guessing this is where things start to go south, right?
Mm, yeah, you guessed it. So in 1997, he signs an employment agreement. And included in that, as you can probably guess, was a 6-month non-compete clause. And then fast forward to December of 98, he's terminated. He fails a drug test.
Oh.
And then just a month later, in January of 99, he gets a job with Airmark Components.
Okay.
Which is a direct competitor of AirCool.
Whoa. So what were the risks for them if he went to work for a competitor, like, especially after all of that really specific training?
Yeah, you can imagine the competitive disadvantage there, right? I mean, they basically paid to train, you know, someone who now has a lot of knowledge of their operations, you know, maybe some trade secrets, and can go apply that to a rival. It's a very, you know, classic scenario where a company is trying to protect their intellectual property, and especially in, you know, kind of a niche industry like this, aviation repair.
Makes sense. So did AirCool try to, like, stop him?
Oh, yeah, they did. They, you know, they sued to enforce the non-compete and even asked for a temporary injunction to stop him from working at Airmark. But the trial court initially said, nope, not going to do it.
Really?
Because they said AirCool didn't show that they had a legitimate business interest that the non-compete would actually protect.
Okay, hold on. Legitimate business interest. So for those of us who, you know, haven't cracked open a law book in a minute, break that down for us.
Yeah. So this is, you know, really important in Florida law, which is what controls this case.
Okay.
So to enforce a non-compete, you can't just be trying to stop competition in general. You have to show that the restriction is really protecting some specific interest of your business. So it's like the legal reason you give for saying, hey, this isn't just because we don't like competition. This is because we need to protect this important part of how we work.
So it's a higher bar than just saying, Like, we don't want people working for the other guys.
Exactly. The court needs to see that connection between the restriction and what you're trying to protect. So, you know, Aerocool, they weren't giving up. They appealed, and this is where things get a little bit more interesting.
All right, this is where it gets juicy. I like it.
Okay.
So what happened at the appellate court level? What'd they think?
Well, the appellate court actually reversed and said, yep, the training Aerocool gave, that counts as a legitimate business interest.
Oh, okay.
You can protect that. But, and this is important, the reasoning wasn't just, oh, training happened.
Okay, yeah. This feels like a turning point. So what was their reasoning? Like, how'd they get there?
They really looked at the details of the training, right? Uh-huh. And this is where all that documentation comes back, right?
Right.
So they looked at all that time, the specialized skills that were taught, that FAA certification.
Oh, right.
It was basically like they were saying this wasn't just, you know, casual on the job stuff. Aerocool put in serious resources to make a highly skilled worker, and that to them needed protecting.
So it wasn't just training. It was like the specific type of training and how much of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was like drawing a line,
right,
and saying, look, employers can't just say they own all the general skills in an industry. But when a company really takes someone with no experience and makes them a specialist, that's different.
Yeah.
That's something they can protect.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially in an industry where it's so much about that very specialized knowledge.
Right. And this is where the case starts to give us some clues for both sides, employers and employees. But we'll get more into those implications a little later.
All right. Well, I am officially hooked. I think we need to take a quick breather, though. And when we come back, let's talk about how this case compares to other, you know, cases out there and what it means for, you know, if you're actually writing these agreements, these non-competes.
Sounds good. Let's do it. So before the break, we were talking about how the court really made a distinction between, you know, general skills and specialized training.
Yeah, that like line in the sand.
Yeah.
Between just knowing stuff and really having expertise because the company invested in you.
Exactly. And to really make that point clear, they compared Aerocool to another case, Austin v. Mid-State Fire Equipment.
Ah, yes. I love those legal precedents. It's always interesting how they, like, connect all the dots.
You got it. So in Austin, the employee already had experience in the fire equipment world before joining the company.
So not like Ooswiesen, where it's all brand new. The company's training wasn't the only way he got that knowledge.
Exactly. And that was a big deal to the court. It wasn't like the employer took someone totally clueless and turned them into an expert.
Yeah. And that makes sense. It's like that blank slate idea, right?
Yeah.
If the employee already has the skills, it's harder to say the employer's training is why they're, you know, competitive.
It's all about that cause and effect, you know? The court wants to see, did the training actually make the employee a competitor? And Aerocool really drives that home.
So we've got the specialized training down, but what about how long the non-compete was? 6 months? Was that cool with the court?
Yeah, good question. So remember, Florida law has this thing called a sliding scale when it comes to how long non-competes can be.
Okay, remind me. Sliding scale, how does that work again?
Basically, the stronger your reason for the non-compete, the longer it can be. Like, imagine a dimmer switch.
Oh.
The brighter the light or the stronger the reason, the more you can turn up that dial, or the longer the non-compete.
Oh, I like that. So more training, like an Aerocool, maybe a longer restriction is okay?
Exactly. And in this case, 6 months. The court said that was reasonable. They looked at all that training, the hours, the specific skills, the certification.
So they weren't just making up that number?
Nope. It's not about shutting down competition entirely, but giving the employer some time to protect their investment.
Okay.
And to the court, 6 months was a good balance. It protected Aerocool, but didn't completely block Ooswiesen from working.
Like they were trying to find that perfect middle ground.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. They saw both sides had a point, right? The company wants to protect what they put in, but the employee should still be able to work.
All right, so specialized training, 6 months, we got that. But let's think practically for a sec. You're a lawyer writing one of these agreements. What are the big things from Aerocool you'd remember?
This case is full of good stuff for writing those non-competes that'll hold up in court.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, make it crystal clear that the training is more than just basic industry stuff. Really sell how special, how unique it is, how it helps the company stay ahead of the competition.
So don't just say training, tell the whole story.
Right. And remember that blank slate thing we talked about? If the employee had no experience before, make sure that's front and center in your argument. It makes it way more convincing that the company's training made the difference.
Like, we didn't just improve them, we built them from scratch.
Exactly. And to really make it airtight, show how the training led to real results, like certificates or special qualifications. Like Ustwiesen's FAA thing, that was huge for Aerocool.
So show me the proof, don't just tell me.
Exactly. Oh, and speaking of proof, documentation is key. Keep super detailed records of that training program. The hours, the costs, the skills taught, everything.
Like, if you want to enforce it, have a file folder bursting with evidence.
Exactly. This case screams, be careful, be strategic when writing these agreements. Generic copy and paste stuff won't cut it.
So no more borrowing from the internet. Got to tailor it.
Absolutely. And before we wrap up on Aerocool, let's not forget this affects both sides, the employer and the employee. It's not just a win for the company.
Right. Everyone's got to know where they stand. What should employees be thinking about after this case?
Especially for folks going into specialized fields, Aerocool says pay attention to those non-competes. If a company's putting a lot into your training, they're probably going to be stricter about enforcing these clauses.
So read the fine print carefully.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to negotiate or get legal advice if you're unsure. Knowing your rights is super important here.
Good point.
Yeah.
Now, from the company's side, does Aerocool give them any comfort that courts will protect their training investment?
Oh, for sure. This case says courts get it, especially for businesses in those niche areas or where special knowledge is key.
Uh-huh.
They see training as a legitimate thing to protect, especially when it's all custom-made, extensive, and well-documented.
So not a guaranteed win, but it shows they're on the company side sometimes.
Right. But the court also made it clear they're not okay with companies going overboard with these restrictions.
So they can't just use it to, like, control employees and stop all competition.
Yeah, exactly. Non-competes gotta be reasonable how long they are, what they cover, where they apply. They gotta be aimed at protecting that specific business interest, not just thrown around all willy-nilly.
Sounds like a lot of legal strategizing goes into this.
It does. And that's why Aerocool is so useful. It's like a guide for navigating this whole world of non-competes. And it shows how courts are trying to balance things for both sides.
Got it. Well, we've covered a lot today. And I think our listeners are getting a pretty good grasp of Aerocool v. Ustwiesen.
I've enjoyed breaking this down with you.
Now, before we wrap up completely, I have one last kind of thought-provoking question I've been thinking about. So could this case actually, like, make companies want to train people more?
Mm-hmm.
Like, knowing they've got this legal thing to, you know, protect that investment.
Yeah, that's a good question. And there's no easy answer. I mean, Aerocool does kind of say, hey, courts will back up those non-competes, especially when the training is directly related to what you're trying to protect.
So it could be like companies are going to go all in on, you know, super skilled workers, because they know they've got some protection if someone tries to leave.
That's one way it could go, yeah. But you got to think about the other side, too. Like, if these non-competes are everywhere and they're too strict, people might feel stuck.
Right.
They might not want to try new things, and that's not good for anyone.
Yeah, it's about finding that balance, right? Protecting the company, but not making employees feel like they can't, you know, move on if they want to.
Exactly. It's a tough one. And it'll be interesting to see how Aerocool affects other cases, even laws, and how companies do training in the future.
Well, this case definitely gave us a lot to think about. It shows how the law is always changing, trying to keep up with how we work.
Yeah. Aerocool v. Ustwiesen, it's a perfect example of how simple ideas, training, competition can get really complicated legally.
It's like a reminder to think carefully, plan ahead, and really know the law.
And don't be afraid to talk to a legal expert, whether you're the company writing the non-compete or the employee signing it. Don't just guess, you know? Get the info. Protect yourself.
Good advice. Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Aerocool v. Ustwiesen. Hopefully everyone's feeling a little smarter about this big case and what it all means.
It's been great talking this through with you.
Likewise. And to all our listeners, keep those legal minds sharp, and we'll see you on our next deep dive. Until then, happy lawyering.